Okay, I'm Pugme.
And I'm Mark Lyon.
We're going to talk a little bit about the death of analog TV. I'm going to do a technical overview of what digital is, some of the things that have happened with the cable TV companies. I work for one of the largest cable TV companies in the U.S. I also work for one of the two companies that builds the systems that are used to send all of the signals that you like to watch on TV.
And I'm here to cover the legal issues. I am an attorney, but first a disclaimer, I'm not your attorney. I'm not here to offer legal advice for your specific situation.
I guess I'll go over a little bit about the history of television, what analog TV is, what digital TV is, what the difference is. This is on a, if you look at a spectrograph, this is what basically, and this is a bitmap I drew this morning, so it's not, you know, perfect, but this is basically what a television station looks like. It uses up 6 hertz worth of bandwidth. All stations, if you look at the picture up there, all stations are sent in black and white, believe it or not. Everything you watch on TV on analog is sent in black and white. And that is for reverse compatibility for black and white TVs, so that everybody who has a black and white TV can still watch on black and white TVs. The sound was added. That's a little sound burst there, so all your sound comes in there. And then the little tiny piece right down there is your color. So they send the picture in black and white, and then they send what we call a color burst, which puts the color into the black and white image and makes it all pretty and what you like to watch. This basic schematic came out in the 1950s. It's been used ever since. This is when people started getting the rabbit ears and the giant antennas you saw on everybody's roof. They have the big picture with everybody getting the antenna so that they can watch TV. The little tiny picture. One thing about this, as this disintegrates, as you get farther out into the field, as there's more resistance in the wires, things like that, your picture slowly starts to fade. So you'll have a nice pretty picture if it's a perfect, you're right next to your cable station. As you get farther out, more things, more ingress, more egress, the picture starts to get fuzzier and fuzzier until you can't see it at all. Digital, as you'll see in a minute as to why, is not quite that way. About the 1990s, companies started going digital. I was part of that. I was working for Scientific Atlanta, which is now Cisco. During this transition, I was working on a lot of the encryption and how they encrypt the signals. With an analog signal, when you encrypt it, usually you play with the horizontal hold, you play with this color burst here, things like that. It's very easy to break. Extremely easy. You would go online or just look in the newspaper and you see tons of people selling set-top boxes that will break analog, not really encryption, just analog playing with the screen pretty easily. Digital came into being. What we call this is a haystack. This is 6 hertz. It's the same amount of space. It looks just like this. It's a haystack. It goes up, you see a little bit of squiggle at the top, and it comes straight back down. You can have approximately 6 stations within that. Now, I say approximately, and also it's one haystack, so you can put, if you have one station, it's still 6 hertz. If you put 20 stations on this, it's still 6 hertz, however many stations you put on this. I say approximately because depending on the station, depending on what's on the station, things like that, it will change how many stations you can put within this 6 hertz. So for example, if I'm got a ball game on, camera moves a lot, background moves a lot, has to rebuild the frame a lot, sometimes you can only get 2 stations if one of them is a ball game or something where the camera moves a lot. If this is a soap opera, A soap opera is usually a still camera. You have a single person talking or moving on the camera. The screen has to be rebuilt very little. It can use a lot of compression. You can put a lot of stations on there. You might get, you know, 9 stations on there. If it's one of the stations that just has the words on it and just changes every once in a while, you can put 50 stations on there. It really depends on your content, and the reason why is compression. With an analog station, you are sending a signal that builds a picture, and that's all you're sending. With this, you are sending a streaming file to a user. It works the same as if you've ever tried to compress a text file. There's a lot of repeated characters. Well, instead of repeating all those characters over and over and over and over again, you just say, well, every time I see this one character, I know it stands for these 20 characters. And you just say, I want one here and here and here, and this file gets smaller. It's exactly the same for compression in the digital age. Let's say you have one background and one person walking back and forth on the background. You don't really have to rebuild the background. It's static. It never changes. And this was when MPEG 2 came out. This is one of the things they did. As long as the background stayed static, all they changed was the person walking back and forth. With MPEG 4, as you move the camera, it could remember what was over here, and as you move the camera back, it would remember it. You wouldn't have to rebuild it. With a ball game, that's not possible because you move constantly. There's too much to remember, things like that. And we always talk about ball games eating up all our bandwidth, and this is why. But that's what it looks like on the spectrograph. The same thing you use to look at this way is the same thing it'll look like, is what it'll look like digitally here.
How much bandwidth would it actually take to rebuild something on a constant basis the way you do with an analog?
About 6 hertz. Oh. If you're always rebuilding it, doing nothing but rebuilding it, it takes about 6 hertz to do that. If it is a HD signal, I forgot to mention this, if it's an HD signal, it's about double this. It's about 12 hertz per station, approximately. Same thing, it's compressed, so if you move it back and forth, HD images are very big. There's a lot more pixels, a lot more to rebuild, things like that. Everyone knows what this is, a sine wave. I'm sure you've all seen a sine wave before. This is the signal when you have a piece of cable coming to your house. This is the signal we send through it. It's a radio wave to come down and give you the signal for it. So what happened when we came up with digital was we have to take this and turn it into a bunch of ones and zeros, which a digital signal is ones and zeros as opposed to an analog signal, which is a radio of a picture. So what we did was we put on all these grids. It started out with just one grid. This will be what's called QAM 4. The current highest QAM is QAM 128, so you can get 128 bits per area, and you can't really get that. You can only get about 40%, and I'll show you why in just a second. So what we did to get the digital signal is put a whole bunch of grids on our wave. Once we had the grids, we took the grid and broke it up into some numbers. This is a basic format for a binary grid. So you can see each of these. Now, in those places, you see where my dots showed up. So each one of those dots stands for a group of 4 binary digits. So I didn't get to the next slide, but the next slide is going to be that wave actually passes through certain dots. And when your TV sees it passing through those dots, it comes up with those ones and zeros. And thus, you've got a streaming file. So each one of these grids passes through those dots. The one problem is, if you look at this, you can't go backwards. So, this here, if you need to hit this one, and then this one, and then this one, that's not possible. This is why you lose some of your signal. You've got to go forward. Always go forward. So if you hit this one and this one, need to go to this one, you've got to go to your next frame set before you can get to this number here. And a lot with the 64 and 128, we've repeated some of these that makes it a little bit faster and a little bit better to do. So we repeat the grids inside the larger grid. What does digital signal give us? Well, as I said before, the degrade of an analog signal, and I can actually turn this off now, because that's all I had time to draw. As you degrade an analog signal, your picture degrades. With the digital signal, that's not true. With the digital signal, you get those ones and zeros to a point. When you hit that point, your picture degrades extremely fast. If you look at an analog signal, as your signal degrades, your picture degrades. It's nice, smooth. With the digital signal, you have a perfect picture, perfect picture, perfect picture, all of a sudden, slam, and you get almost nothing. One of the cool things about digital, that's why with the digital signal you get a constant good image, it seems like, for a while. There are more factors involved in what degrades a signal and things like that. You can also look at, with the digital, you can control the set top better. You can do all sorts of things better. Now, one of the things we wanted to talk about was some of the disadvantages, and then mostly what I've talked about are the advantages. It's a great technology. We can get more channels within a single set. We get more compression. We get things like that. Some of the problems. We're able to watch what you're watching more. Which a lot of people see that as we're spying on you. I'll tell you right now, there's no software around that actually spies on a single person. FBI really doesn't care what you watch on TV. Honestly.
The ratings,
however, those are done in clusters. So as an individual person, you're completely anonymous. As a group of 10,000 people, yes. They're going to know what you watch on television, but as an individual, you're still absolutely anonymous.
Yeah, but Nelson doesn't have any inroads and then the set-top boxes and currently on the market.
Right.
So you have to be signed up for Nelson to be able to do
But the cable companies do have a report of what they're going to be watching, and part of that is so that we know what programming to put up, we know what to block off to make sure it's always on and things like that. It's always going to be a good signal and things. Also, what to send to as the technology progresses. We don't always have to send a signal all the time. We can send a signal to these three neighborhoods because we know they're going to be watching this random program that not many other people watch. We won't even send it to the other neighborhoods unless they ask for it. But they'll have a delay. When they click on the station, it's going to delay because nothing's going to their neighborhood. Now, this isn't the case yet.
That's cable, though.
That's not over the air. That is cable. But most people have cable right now. Over the air, you can't really do the other. It's only one way. You only send out. What this is called QAM, and please don't ask me to pronounce what QAM stands for, because the words are about this big. And it has to do with, instead of frequency modulation or amplitude modulation, it's quadra amplitude. It's huge. It's absolute huge tongue twister for what QAM stands for. I'm going to hand it over right now, unless there's some immediate questions.
One other question. You said that right now there's not a way for the cable company to monitor anybody as an individual. Take that back. Not that there's another way, but it's not being done.
Right.
I'm assuming that if you can monitor a group, you can monitor an individual.
You can.
Whether they implement the technology.
I say it's not being done. There's no piece of software that makes it feasible to do that, except for purposes of troubleshooting. If your signal is bad and you call us and say your signal is bad, we're going to log on to your set-top box and we're going to figure out why your signal's bad. We can see what the signal looks like and all of that, as long as the signal's good enough for us to get the information back. But right now there's nothing out there that can... I'm a government agency. I've got a tap on everything else you have. What is he watching on TV? There's nothing that'll do that right now. It's a lot just to do that for a phone, for the digital phone signals is huge. A lot of this goes into the frequencies now. If you, I'm sure you've all seen the advertisements from the cable company, get our VoIP phone and get our internet connection. I have a cable modem at home. They're using the same thing. It's exactly the same thing with these ones and zeros. It's exactly the same thing with the wave going through the grid for the telephone and your internet. So we've already done the same government, have to have a warrant, wiretapping things, have already been implemented. It's a lot of work. It's not worth it for TV. It's really not. Nobody cares what you watch that much. So, anybody else have a question? Okay.
Well, on the legal side, we have this entire conversion that's happened. We've got everybody that has their invested infrastructure in the analog signals, and now we're forcing, we're not asking, we're not having a genuine transition because the technology is better and the broadcasters decided to do that. We've made a decision as a government with the FCC that we are going to force everyone to swap over to digital signals. That's at the same time that we're swapping to a new type of television. You know, you've got LCDs and flat panels and all that fun stuff that's also much more expensive. And it's created a lot of issues with people who don't want to purchase new equipment and who don't want to expand. Is anyone aware of what is going to happen next Monday? No. Wilmington, South Carolina is going to become the first test market. One of the big concerns over the digital transition, which is going to happen in February of next year, is that we had not actually had a test location where this had actually happened before. And on one day, all across the country, every analog broadcast signal was going to be turned off and swapped over to a digital signal. Wilmington's going to test this situation out for us to see if it actually works. They've done a lot of marketing and promotion in that area in order to encourage conversion over to digital reception. There will be two analog stations to continue to operate. There will be a public broadcast station for emergency purposes, and then there will be a low power station that will still be broadcasting. So we'll get to actually see, and so definitely be watching the tech news next week, starting Monday or Tuesday. You'll see a lot of feedback about how that actually worked.
Is that North Carolina or South?
I believe it's North Carolina. Let me look. I was without my notes today, so I'm actually trying to operate off my phone. Wilmington, North Carolina. Yeah, sorry about that.
When you say next week, you mean tomorrow?
Monday after this, the 8th, is the actual conversion day. Now, one of the things that was discussed earlier was the signal degradation with analog signals. There are a lot of people who receive their programming through cable television, and for those people, their experience won't change. The FCC has implemented rules that are going to require the analog signal to still be carried, except in networks where they don't have an analog signal at all, I think is how that was set up. If they can fully convert it over to digital, they don't have to carry the analog signal. It's going to create an interesting situation for the cable companies. They're going to actually have to directly receive the digital signal and then convert that back to an analog signal to send out to their customers. So it's added some expense to the cable company side of the situation that they might not have otherwise wanted to shoulder. But most of the cable companies are pushing in towards getting a set-top box, so they'll be able to transmit it to you digitally and operate with it that way. But with the people who are receiving signals over the air, they don't have that same luxury. The government did institute a small program to give you $40 rebate for a conversion box that would receive the digital signal and then convert it over to an analog signal for your television. That program has received some additional monies in there, but there's not enough money to provide a box for everyone who owns a TV. That is expected that most people will pick up a television capable of receiving the digital signals. But the multipath issue creates a big problem for people that are receiving over-the-air broadcasts. In the area that I live right now in New York City, our tallest transmitting tower, which was on top of the World Trade Center, is no longer available. So a lot of the broadcasts are taking place from other locations that don't give as good of coverage of the city. it causes multipath issues when you try to receive a signal from inside a building and you're getting a reflected signal off of one building and the next. And in analog broadcast, you got ghosted images. Your quality was poor. With the digital signal, you don't actually get enough of those ones and zeros for your set to be able to assemble the image itself. So you actually wind up losing your ability to receive the picture if you're at a point where your signal's degraded enough. That's not something that's been fully worked out, especially with the licensees. Yes?
Yeah, that's because you're going with 8BSB. I mean, why did the FCC decide to go with 8BSB modulation versus co-FDM?
That would probably be best left to my tech side here. There was a lot of back and forth, a lot of public comment that was allowed, and the commissioners did eventually make a technical decision that allowed, you know, one encoding over the other. It may be unfortunate, and it's going to create some issues as we move forward. There are some other markets, the Mississippi and New Orleans market specifically. When Hurricane Katrina came through, a lot of the television stations lost their towers. So there are a lot of licensees that are broadcasting from locations other than their license location. They now have a different footprint. And when you convert the signal from analog to digital, you're going to get different coverage. And it's hard to predict based on the differences in coverage. There are also several station licensees down on the southern border and on the northern border that have been allowed to exceed the normal, I believe it's 80,000 watt range, and go up to about 100,000 watt for their VHF broadcast. Now that they're converting over to a different bandwidth, they're going to be at a different frequency, they're going to be transmitting at a different power level, and they're going to lose coverage in some areas that would otherwise receive it. This, of course, brings additional costs to consumers. Individuals are going to have to purchase satellite services. They're going to need to purchase cable services where they might have otherwise been happy with their broadcast services. It should be something that we anticipate seeing. I wouldn't anticipate a lot of litigation growing, but there may be some class action type work. And there may be some extension if this test facility doesn't go forward. If once the test happens, if there is enough uprising there with the poor ability to receive signals or people who aren't able to get over the air broadcast, we might see Congress delay the implementation from the February deadline. Yes, ma'am.
I'm not sure if I understood you correctly. You said that right now cable companies, when they're broadcasting, are receiving the signal in digital and reconverting it down to analog for those TVs that don't have the ability to do digital. But you said that come February, they can still transmit to you in analog. That's where I kind of got lost.
May not have been clear there. The over-the-air broadcast, the actual signal that's going to be sent out over the air, is going to be digital, and it's changing the location of the spectrum. We're actually freeing up some space in our radio airwaves. There's a limited amount of space that can be used. And this newly freed space is going to be allowed to be used for communication services. There's a big push right now to try to use some of that for an internet service. There's also a segment of it that's, I believe, around channel 47, 48, 49 that's going to be converted over to emergency radio services. So for the broadcast reception, you're going to have to get a digital signal in February if the current ruling stands. But for your cable company down the cable wire actually sends you digital signals for your HD services and all your neat things there. But then they also send you an analog video service. If you have cable service where you directly plug your cable wire into your television and you don't have a cable card or some other neat option that lets you actually translate their digital service over into whatever you're trying to watch, then you're actually watching an analog signal. If you've got a set-top box, your set-top box may receive solely digitally and then convert to your TV for analog. But the cable companies, for a period of time, which at this point looks to be about 2 years, are going to be required to transmit the analog signal if they currently broadcast the analog signal through their cable. So if you're able to directly plug your cable into the television, you're still going to be able to do that in February. When that will end will be, of course, subject to change.
And that was actually supposed to end originally in 2004, I think. And the cable companies have pushed it back and pushed it back and pushed it back. The reason why is an analog for me to broadcast an analog signal. I can go down to Radio Shack and I can buy $15-$20 worth of parts, and I can broadcast an analog TV signal. It's very inexpensive to do. Usually we buy, you know, little devices to do it, and they cost $300-$400. A digital signal, in order to broadcast a digital signal, the device used to broadcast one station is about the price of a luxury car. It's about $65,000 per station. It's a lot of expense for every single, all of our cable TV stations, which, you know, we're talking about 1,000 cable TV stations. Every channel that every cable station has, in order to convert it to digital, is $65,000. So we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars for us to convert from analog to digital. And it's, that's why the cable TV stations have been saying, hold on, you can't give us, you can't force us to do this in this small amount of time. And it's really been them that's been driving the pushback, trying to push the time back so that we can get all our equipment together, tested, you know, all our people trained, because we have to train all these people on how to use the new equipment. You know, rack the equipment, set up the equipment, set up all the, it's much more complicated to do. It's a lot of work.
If you're not broadcasting the signal over the air, which I thought was what the FCC was modifying, why do you even have to go to digital? If you're like CNN, for instance.
It's not just over the air that's required to do this.
Okay,
so as a cable TV company, we're also required to do this. The reason why, it used to be that, you know, a cable TV company is private, and so a cable TV company does not have to broadcast. They can broadcast whatever they want. It's our cable, and well, that was the original plan. However, there was a problem in somewhere around DC where one of the users close to an airport had made their own little box that split it up so that they could run cable onto televisions. Well, that box had a lot of egress and ingress, which means signal gets out and signal gets in. Well, a lot of signal was getting out, and the cable TV station in the area was broadcasting on the same frequencies as the airplane radios and the emergency frequencies for the airplane radios. So they ended up with a plane crash, a lot of people killed, because someone had redone their cable box. At that point, the FCC stepped in and said, we're going to have to regulate you. And that's where all of that started. That's why we're regulated and why they're requiring us to do the same things in our signals.
I didn't realize they did that.
Yeah.
The regulation that I just heard was that you know, in a year from now, the over-the-air stuff will have to be digital. And which part of it is going to be regulated for the cable companies?
All of it. We're required to move every station we have over to digital.
Oh, and then the only question is when, or what is it that's...
Currently, I think you said...
Is it required that a digital signal then be generated for every station? But that in addition, the part that you said that's being deferred is that there's still an analog, and that's the part that may be deferred?
It's going to be co-carry, is I think the term that they're using right now, where they're going to carry the digital signal and the analog signal only on cable. You'll be able to get the analog signal through cable.
Which is how it is now, in fact.
Exactly.
Your lower stations, usually what was called VHF, most of your lower stations in cable are analog still. When we started moving over to digital, the cable companies were also the ones that wanted to start moving over to digital. We wanted just a few high stations so that we could get six stations and 6 hertz, because we were running out of space. There was only so much space that they would let us use. We couldn't go into signal frequencies that they were using for other things. So we only had so much space, so we wanted to put in a few digital stations. So right now, your higher stations are normally... depends on how they set it up. Your higher stations are normally digital and your lower stations are normally analog, so that no matter what kind of TV you have, you can get. What we use is the DOCSIS project, and now the DOCSIS 2 project. are really big terms right now for moving over to digital.
So that right now, that in general, the high stations, say above 90 or something like that, are digital, mm-hmm. and digital only probably, and therefore they would not be required under this to carry analog. But that the lower stations, which are probably analog only now, mm-hmm. would be required to have a digital component as well as at that date. But in addition, would be required to continue to carry analog if they're carrying it now.
For
another.
Yes. When it's converted over, it won't just be a digital component. It will be all digital. You will not be able to get if you have an analog TV, it won't work without a converter box at all.
And that's something with the current marketing campaign. I think most people have cable, but there are many people, amazingly, who do not. For many, it's an availability issue, and for many, it's a cost issue, and it's certainly a reasonable choice. And a lot of places, you're provided with lots of great service over the air. So there hasn't been an incentive to go with cable for many options. But the current marketing campaign out there that's being pushed for the cable company side tells you that things are going to continue to work. There's not a lot of gloom and doom that's been yelled yet, which is a concern on my part for the people who are going to be unable to use their television equipment when the transition happens.
We just got our converter box with the $40 rebate, and we lost our PBS station, basically, the only difference we had. PBS, we used to have two great stations here in Atlanta, and then Channel 30 now just doesn't, occasionally you get one image, but there's never any sound, and it just doesn't come through. So is there any chance of that changing, or that's just they have a weak signal and that's never going?
That's going to be a signal issue, and unless there's a way that they increase their signal with their license, you're going to have to improve your ability to receive the signal.
I've actually got a question for you. How difficult was that rebate? What did you have to do? Because I haven't heard of anybody who's actually done it yet and had it work.
It's just an online website you go to, you just fill in the information. It's not a rebate. They actually send you like a little gift card, and it's just $40 credit to wherever you
want
to buy.
Oh, okay.
Did
okay,
you?
Cool.
You go to FCC.gov and it goes. There's a link off of their site to the
yeah. I was just wondering if y'all had had any trouble with it or anything like that. It was okay.
You can only spend it on a box that can down converts to standard definition. You can't spend it on a box that'll like if you're trying to receive Fox and watch a football game high def on the digital. You won't be able to get the rebate on a set-top box that will convert to high def for you. It has to only have analog outputs.
Okay.
Assuming y'all work for cable companies, or at least one of you does?
I do.
Are they still going to keep in, I don't know, are you in Atlanta or are you?
I'm in Atlanta.
Are they going to keep in the local channels only grandfathered plan that used to be there? It used to be by just local channels for a flat rate, but for places that could not receive over-the-air signals.
That's going to depend on your individual provider. While I work in Atlanta and work for a cable company in Atlanta, we actually we're not allowed to have service in Atlanta. The FCC required us not to have service in Atlanta because we already own so much advertising. The newspaper and the radio stations and a lot of the TV stations that they're like, nope, sorry, you can't have a monopoly.
Do y'all have that other places where y'all do have service?
Macon and Gainesville and around, just not inside Atlanta.
And there have been some FCC rules that have been put into place that set up must-carry stations and set up basic tiers of requirements. They did toss away the idea, though, of the completely unbundled service where you could purchase, I want Channel 2, 17, 9, and then I want HBO.
There used to be like the first 13, where Fox and PBS and everything else were.
Right. I believe that we are required, I'm not positive about this, but I believe that we are required to carry local stations.
Yeah.
And it's the...
What I mean is just a local stations only package versus saying, mm-hmm. I want to pay $59.95 a month to get just the three or four local stations.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, I think we are required to carry the local stations and the local station package.
And the local station issue brings up another odd topic. Now that your broadcast can include not just one video signal, local stations don't mean just one local channel anymore. It might also mean two streams of video and a text stream, And that's created some issues for the cable companies for exactly how many of those local channels are they required to carry. And the current understanding with the FCC is they have to carry the mainstream from each of the broadcasters.
One of the issues that came up, seeing how many of you have had some of your neighbors come over and ask you about a box? You know, I got to get one of these boxes. What do I get? I said, oh, I don't know. So I went online and started looking, and there's virtually no information to allow you to compare one box to another, what feature sets, what's a good one, what's a bad one.
There's really...
very few set of boxes out there at the moment.
Yeah, there's... There's very few of them, and they really don't do that much. I mean, it's not a huge technological thing to convert from analog to digital.
Oh no, that's what I'm looking at. Is, for instance, somebody said, hey, I'd like a radio for my, you know, in the kitchen.
Uh huh.
Well, some of them have the sensitivity of a brick, and others can receive a signal from Australia at the right time of day.
Mm-hmm.
And they both cost the exact same amount. So signal sensitivity, the chips that they're using, all those things can make a profound difference in the quality and performance of them, and how well it receives a signal, for instance. Well, there's no that kind of consumer information to allow you to discern between one model and another if that one's actually better, or even if the claims that they make about the performance of the box are true. Many of us learn in technology, if the vendor's mouth is moving, he's lying. I don't trust that his specs do what they say until somebody demonstrates what they say.
And I think part of that is because we haven't had these widespread tests, like what they're going to do in Wilmington next week.
Yeah, for instance, if they say, well, my signal receiver has a minus 98 dB floor and the signal noise ratio of 5, you can actually take it in a lab and test it. The Consumer Reports does it all the time with TVs. I mean, that's possible to do.
It's also to get ducked in, depending on where your house is. And, you know, even with just the cloud ducting, you're talking about getting different signals and sensitivity. You can take the same two units, put them in one corner of your house, receive something from Australia, pick it up, walk to the other side of your house, and the other unit will do it. My sideband CB does it all the time. I can be sitting on one side of the hill and pick up stuff coming from Australia that's, you know, being blocked by the hill pretty much. We'll go to the other side and pick up stuff from England.
Not only that, you don't have to move your box. You can be standing in one place in your house and pick up one signal and walk over to somewhere else without touching the box and pick up a completely different. When I was a kid, we used to have my mother stand in this one place in the doorway so that we could watch a cartoon we wanted to watch because it wouldn't come on unless she stood right there.
So we're sort of back to the rabbit ears and grabbing aluminum foil.
Yeah, for people who are receiving over the air, it very much reorient your receiving antenna and just hope that you're able to receive enough of a signal. But to your earlier question, I think part of the reason that there's such a lack of independent review of the equipment that's out there is that the type of geekery that goes into wanting to test out all the set-top boxes for reception quality and noise floor and all that type of stuff is not there, because that group has moved to cable or satellite in most instances. You don't have enough of a group that's willing to fight the technical side of that.
I also think that some of that is, if I'm going out to buy a DVD player, I'm going to do a lot of research online to figure out what kind of DVD player I want and things like that. If I'm going to go out and buy a little converter that converts the RCA plug into an S-video plug, a little tiny converter, I'm really not going to research it. I'm going to go in and I'm just going to buy a little converter and bring it home, because the technology is a very simple technology to convert the two, and it's the same for analog and digital. There's not that much technology that converts it. Your as far as signal strength and things like that, it has more to do with your antenna, how your antenna is pointed, how much resistance is in the cable, how long the cable is between your antenna and your box, things like that, then it has to do with that little converter that just converts the signal from analog and digital.
It's also subjective.
Yeah. I think we've had one back there.
Yeah, right here.
I was just curious, and it seems like as soon as HD became more popular, it was required for cable companies to broadcast over clear QAM, at least the broadcast channels, so that TVs without cable cards could get HD feeds for at least the channels in the area. Do you know if that kind of thing is expected to continue? Is there a certain level of HD service that's required to be provided by the cable company?
No, as a matter of fact, there's no HD service that's required to be provided. We don't have to give you HD at all. Digital is required. Yeah. But HD,
we don't. The local channels here on my
just so they can literally be taken down
HD from
WSB, strip it down to 480i, resend it, and that would be the required to do.
I think that we are required to send with certain stations without HD, as a matter of fact. I think that your local stations, we're required to send. Now we can send on another channel those same stations in HD, but I believe we're required to send you those stations just in a regular digital format because of emergency weather, the emergency broadcasting system, things like that. You have to still be able to receive emergency broadcasting system messages whether you have HD or not.
Just to preserve bandwidth? Is that
No, because if there's a tornado warning, I have to make sure that you get that tornado warning. And if I'm broadcasting that station in HD and you don't have an HD, you're not going to get that warning. So I'm required to broadcast it in something that you can receive.
As well as are y'all taking, you're talking about the $65,000 piece of equipment. Is that pretty much just an AD converter?
No.
I know a lot of people have talked about it in the past, but they're just going to take the analog that's coming in from Fox, or the feed they're getting in from Fox,
Most of our feeds, the way the feeds come in, and one of the reasons I talked about earlier, I was debating whether to talk about it. I talked about how it's the lower stations that are analog. It's usually your local stations. It has to do with price. When as a cable company, we have two hubs here in Atlanta and out in San Diego. Most of our feeds come into those hubs. Most of our big feeds. Fox Network, things like that. They come in, we convert it here with the QAM, that big piece of equipment. We send it out to Macon, we send it out to Gainesville, we send it out to Houston, we send it all over there. So we only have one QAM for all those signals. But the local stations in Gainesville were required to send. Well, we would have to have a QAM for each one of those local stations. So we only have to have one QAM for the big stations like the Fox Network, CNN, things like that. But the local stations were still sending analog because we don't want to have to buy QAMs for every one of these. We want to have a central location that has all of those QAMs.
But if they're broadcasting, don't they have to provide the digital signal at that point since they're the broadcaster? Don't they have to give you all that? Since they have to convert to digital for over the air, wouldn't they have to provide you a digital signal?
Yeah, wouldn't you just remux their signal?
They don't have to. They can send us whatever they want. And we have to bring it in and convert it.
Isn't it already over the air digital anyway? If you had a big antenna, you could grab what they're giving you digitally.
It can't, possibly. Most of the time, but in like Gainesville, Florida, little tiny town. if you've ever been there, and a lot of their equipment is literally from the 50s. it's really not as bad in Gainesville, but when I was working for Scientific Atlanta, we got a call in from a little cable station in Alabama, and there were only three people who worked for the cable station, first off. We got the last line. It was a guy who had dropped out of school in third grade. He didn't know how to read. They had just moved to digital. All he did was pull cable. That's all he had done all his life, was go out, you know, since he was a teenager, and just pulled cable and plugged cable in. And I had to sit him in front of a Solaris box and describe the letters on the keyboard to him so that he could reboot the box, F-disk it, boot it back up, and get it working again. These are some of the places that we're talking about. Oh, yeah, it was a six-hour call.
Hey, that's impressive that it was only 6 hours.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it had to be F-disked. It had to be booted into single user mode, so there's no modem at that point.
You just give them a preloaded reinstall disk and it boots it and nukes it.
Oh, well, it was, yeah, I'd still have to describe to them what a disk looked like. And
which shiny
I didn't
side.
Know how, yeah. Where was their cable station was in an old wooden shack in the back of a graveyard. It had an outhouse. They didn't have a bathroom in it. It was an outhouse. It was literally an old wooden shed. This is some of the cable stations we're talking about, and these are the ones that are going to be the biggest problems.
And you've got to remember, there are 1,745 approximate full power licensees at this point. So that means for a cable company that covers the entire nation, they're going to have to spend that money to cover 1,745 stations because they're required by law to broadcast them down their pipe. They don't have a choice in that matter. So that's a lot of money to put out right up front.
Incentives or anything else to even help take care of the burden?
That's not limited.
Not for cable TV companies.
Yeah. Well, yeah, given how they wreck. Yeah.
Jack, we're not airlines.
Yeah. Jack, given how they jack the rates up regularly.
Well, every year they... For us, for me personally, I see the biggest impact. We have cable, and we did not switch to digital cable because I use a bunch of VCRs to record. Like three, four, I got like five VCRs out of the house to record, to dub from one to the other. I know this old technology, it is, but it works.
Yeah.
And they're convenient. You can take them out, you can put them in, they start right off. And they're, you know, and it's distributed through the house, and obviously they're all analog, as are the TVs that we have. The TVs are easier to replace, but they're fewer. I'm assuming that the VCRs, that with a conversion to strict digital by cable, none of this stuff would work at all.
You will have to get a box for every single VCR.
That's the way it sounded.
Mm-hmm.
Or you sort of PC with a multi-port card.
And that also means that boxes have to, the VCRs can be set to program to go to a different station automatically. And I know that some VCRs can have rabbits or something like that to change the cable box. But it's just a much more complex technology. And I'm wondering...
something like a Kiva?
Wondering what I'm missing that could simplify that.
Well, there's not going to be a lot that can simplify that, and the reason is that the other motivating factor in this transition over to digital is the content side of the situation. And the content providers do not want you to have the ability to record this onto multiple tapes and to dub copies and to do all sorts of things, especially with the digital signal, because now you have the ability to transmit perfect copies as opposed to slightly degraded copies. Mm-hmm. So the digital conversion is going to push a lot more digital rights management and a lot more content protection side of things onto your end than you would like.
I'd like to point out one thing for you, is that most of the digital boxes actually feature a timer, or have a timer feature that'll change to a channel at a given time, like they can be in standby mode, and they'll turn themselves on, go to the channel that you wanted, so you can still program your VCR. You know, but you have to also go to the extra step of saying, like, I've got a cable, or I've got my little converter box. Let me set the timer for recording The Simpsons at 8 or something like that.
And they also have video center PCs now that are coming with 8-port QAM and analog tuners on them. You plug in each cable. Each one of those is a separate input, just like a VCR. They're coming with, you know, 4 by $100 piece, 500 gig drives, 3 terabyte drives for about $2,000. On the last one I saw, as cheap as... You're jacking each one of your cables, and then you tell it what you want to record. You select and just tell it to go. Anytime you want to watch it, there it is. And then they have standard RCA out, and you plug it into whatever.
I'd get a dozen sling boxes before I paid for that.
Yeah, if you're going to set up VCRs, though, it's not like you're going to go out and buy $2,000 worth of VCRs to watch.
You replace the VCRs before you do that.
Right back on the VCR the same way.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, part of this equation, like, these converter boxes work with over-the-air. That doesn't work for cable. And I'm wondering, I've heard that, and I had a coworker who had a dual cable card TV, and he had an atrocious time trying to get Charter, in particular, to support this cable card system that he had set up. And I'm wondering, in the future, this is going to be a bigger issue when people start making, you know, VCRs, lower-level devices that work with cable.
Actually, that's kind of what DOCSIS is for, and DOCSIS is going to fix a lot of those issues. The way DOCSIS is going to work is, and it's the cable companies are whined like you would not believe about DOCSIS, and the reason why is before we could charge you for your cable box.
See, there's no incentive, in my view, for the cable company to support these things.
they're being required to support DOCSIS. Right.
They're being required by regulation, and that's part of the problem that has developed at this point. A lot of smaller systems, it's almost impossible to get your cable card. They have to offer it. It has to be available, but they don't have to have it right there at the front counter for you. And there are a lot of cable systems that are pushing people into cable boxes that the FCC is very carefully monitoring the situation. And if you do encounter one of those situations where you're not being treated properly as a cable card customer, make certain to report it to the FCC. It's 1-800-CALL-FCC-1, I believe is the number where you can contact directly as a complaint. But they're actually monitoring cable systems that are having problems with this, and it's becoming an issue not only with their local renewals, but also with the FCC now.
Could you explain what that DOCSIS is?
Basically, if instead of selling you a cable box, we only have to sell you a little card now. And you can take that card home and you can plug it into a cable box that you bought at Best Buy or somewhere else, wherever you want. You just plug in that card and it pulls in all the codes and all the encryption, everything you need for us to give you service. So you can buy your own box. You're not forced to buy our box anymore.
And what should one of these little cards cost?
Usually a rental fee.
Yeah, it's really inexpensive. Like he said, $3 a month or something along those lines.
And what it does is it takes the proprietary part of the cable box and gives you just that. You don't pay for all the extra stuff that they like to upcharge, you know.
Yeah.
DOCSIS.
Yeah.
You'll convention for cable modems too.
Right, and if you have a cable modem and you're renting a cable modem, chances are it's not DOCSIS compliant. I highly suggest you go and you buy your own cable modem and you buy one that is DOCSIS 2 compliant. You will see the speeds of your cable modem triple as soon as you plug that thing in.
And if you build your own TFTP server, you can change your own rate limits.
Yeah. This is a cable modem that's DOCSIS
2 compliant.
All this is just a standard that all of the equipment manufacturers actually have to, certain minimum standards that they have to adhere to, so that you can buy a cable modem made by this company and not have to worry about, is it going to work on my system, because the one that got hit by lightning was made by this company. That's really all it is. And then what he's saying is that they've got for the television signal part of it, a card that does the encryption for their signal, so that it takes away the proprietary hardware that they used to have to charge you more money for.
On top of that, the DOCSIS 2 stuff is so much more advanced than the old cable modem style that you're going to see your speeds just fly as soon as you get up to DOCSIS 2.
You'll need one for every television.
We should distinguish between the cable modem for internet and cable card for TV.
Right, the DOCSIS 2. Yeah.
Thank you, though.
Just making sure.
Where did this DOCSIS standard come from?
It's a group called Cable Labs, and it's a bunch of cable modem companies or cable TV companies. Honestly, there's a kind of secret meeting like the Illuminati out in really, it's, you would not believe how secret this thing is out in Colorado. Yeah, it really, I've been to lots of the meetings, and they meet out in Colorado. Just about. Four times a year. And the way the meeting, it's a weekend usually. And they separate it into individual meetings. And there's a big meeting with the FBI. That's usually the one I sit on, or the government meetings, because I do so much with security. And we set the security standards. You would not believe how many of your rights are protected by the cable companies. You really would not believe how those meetings come down to, the FBI comes in and says, you're going to give us this. And we look back at them and say, no, we're not. we're going to give you this. This is what we're required. Yeah. We have our lawyers sitting right next to us, and we say, can we do this? Yeah, okay. We're not going to give you that. Sorry.
The cable companies were trying to force the box, their boxes on people because they're also data collecting as well. They're seeing what you're watching and when, and they're sending that back like Tebow was.
Oh, we can still do that with DOCSIS. Yeah.
Cable cards.
That has...
block you to outgoing traffic.
Yeah, we still do that with DOCSIS. Mm-hmm.
That would make for more accurate ratings as far as Nielsen's, right? Isn't that one of the goals mm-hmm. as well?
Yeah.
The Nielsen system up to this point has been really kind of...
Right. Before this, you would have... I would have... For all those people in the room, I'd pick you. I'd say, okay, you as a person stand for all of them. And so it's like the Electoral College. So whatever you watch on TV... We consider everybody here to watch the same thing she does. So the decisions that she makes about what she watches, we're going to change what you watch by what she does. That's how the old rating system works. So, yeah.
They give you a little data collection pager.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if she sits and watches Weather Channel all day, and that's all she does, we're going to give you 5 weather channels next season.
It's music, right? It's the music call.
And it was self-reported. She would be required to fill out a little paper diary mm-hmm. at one point, which was even more hilarious.
Yeah.
That's why the new pager things that I've seen in music are a lot better, because all you do is just wear it. It doesn't matter whether you watch TV or not, or radio or whatever. It just picks up the encrypted signal. It's added into the broadcast signal.
Hmm. Well, now... what we do is basically we bring in all of these. We watch whatever you guys watch, it'll signal us back and put a little count into a system, and then we just give that count. We say we had 15,000 people watching Scooby-Doo Saturday night. Let's do another Scooby-Doo, day of all Scooby-Doo.
Like if I've got a digital TV, I know it's not sending back out.
It's always the cable boxes.
Yeah. No, your cable card lets them...
Yeah, the card will let you do it, too. Right, it's only for two-directional. So if you are a one-way, a single direction, and it's not just airwaves, we have... If you have 10% of your people as a cable TV provider, if 10%... of the your customers are one-way carriers, you're doing really, really good. Believe it or not, a lot of the signals only come back one way. There are lots of reasons for that. Some people are really paranoid and they put these little buffers on the back of their boxes to block two-way traffic so that nothing comes back out. Also, the information that comes back to us as a cable provider is in the very low frequencies. And those low frequencies have more egress and ingress than the higher frequencies. And we do that on purpose so that we know that our stuff coming back to us isn't as important as you as a customer being satisfied and staying our customer. So we make sure your signal gets there and our stuff is just, if it gets there, good. We get 90% of it, which is a pretty good ratio.
Like we've got a QAM tuner that's built into the HDTV we just mm-hmm. bought. And we just put the straight cable company connection from the wall into that that's coming to the standard feed.
And that was a requirement that the FCC put in place, that all new equipment sold, it's been about a year and a half now, maybe 2 years, was required to include a decoder for the basic ATSC signal.
That's on certain size TVs, though. That's like up until February of next year, it won't be for all TVs. It's like it started off on like your 60-inch LCDs or plasmas, then it moved down to 40s, and it moved down to, until like next year, I think it's going to be even old tube TVs. That anything that's brand new has to have a decoder.
And all stores now have to label the coding or what it can receive. Best Buy ran into some trouble with this. They had a slight bit of difficulty. But anywhere you shop for a TV now, it should be labeled and should identify what type of signals it can receive.
Is the digital transition going to take care of a lot of the quality control issues that have traditionally been plagued cable? I work for a local NBC affiliate in my hometown, and we constantly get nasty phone calls from people who, it's not us, our signal's being, retransmitted, but when they get it, it's all messed up by their cable provider. I mean, as far as accountability, is there like...
Well, if you're a provider before the cable company comes in, like your Fox network sending out, then no. But your cable TV, absolutely. You need to, if you're receiving a bad signal, call your cable TV company and tell them. And if they don't come out and fix it, they can't charge you.
And it's probably going to change the type of complaints that you get. You know, whereas now you may have a few people that are on the fringe area of coverage inside the cable system where they're on the longest piece of cable that they've got and you've got low signal or something. You're now going to run into a problem where everybody's either going to get a great signal or there's something completely wrong, and it'll be global for everybody on that network. If their encoding equipment is having a problem, it's going to be an error for everybody who tries to watch the channel.
So it'll be such a massive problem, it'll have to resolve itself, basically.
Right. We'll have to go out. Because, yeah, digital, as I was saying.
Digital's either A or B. It either works or it doesn't.
Troubleshooting is a lot easier with digital, especially the Scientific Atlanta set-top box, the ones I worked on. there are literally 30 pages of troubleshooting information that you can get off those set-top boxes yourself. There's a little circle with a button in the middle. If you turn off your set-top box, hold that button down and turn it back on, and just wait, just keep holding it down, and it should come up with this menu. And you can scroll through it, and you can see the dBs for each station. You can change stations and have it, you know, you can get a chart with what dots are coming in, what aren't. There's a whole bunch of information held in there that you can pull, and you can troubleshoot your own box if you really want to.
Can you do that?
As a local broadcaster, if you're not already offering direct fiber optic connection to your signal for the local cable providers and stuff like that, you might want to look into it so that you can eliminate a possibility of another problem. If they're receiving you over the air, yeah, that's definitely something to look into. I know that the satellite providers try to receive their signal that way. I actually worked on an agreement to do that, but I don't know if the cable companies do. Do you guys put fiber straight to the stations?
It depends.
As in all things, it depends.
It's a money thing. I mean, if we're making a whole lot of money from this one area, then we're going to put fiber into that area just because our troubleshooting will be better. We'll never have a problem with it. You know, it's worth it for us to pay for all that fiber we're running just to go over there.
Any questions?
Are you a lawyer for the FCC?
I am not a lawyer for the FCC. I work for the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got like a comment. I'm in Jacksonville, Florida.
Uh-huh.
And when they went through, we had like 30 miles an hour winds, and the digital signal kept like freezing. You couldn't watch the moons.
The analog probably gave you fuzz too.
It wasn't like crystal clear, but I mean, at least it was watchable.
Yeah. And that's the thing about digital. That's the thing about digital. It's on or it's off. It's not it degrades a little and then comes back. It flips off. And you have what's called macro blocking, which is where you see those blocks start to show up in a digital, and that's how you know it's a digital signal and a digital problem, is you see those blocks. With analog, it's just the fuzz. You
blocks
see.
Are related to blocks that are being updated for the progressive updates. The ones that start going black when you lose mm-hmm. your signal are the ones that are being should have been updated or were updated.
Well, it doesn't know what needs to be updated when it starts macro blocking, so the blocks could show up everywhere, not just what needs to be updated. So it'll also freeze sometimes, and that means it doesn't know what is updated, and it's a more massive failure if you just see the screen freeze for a second.
Yeah,
it means it's not receiving it. That problem will actually be fixed pretty soon. When we start upgrading to having caches on the cable boxes, so you'll be a few seconds behind your signal, but it'll be held in cache, which will be really nice.
Already. It's like it's a little couple seconds off from the analog version.
Yeah.
That's yeah. At the cable company.
Yeah,
they
have
so
yeah.
much to encode that signal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, are the broadcast strength limitations, the wattages of the transmitters, are they the same for digital as they are for analog?
There are different requirements for their transmit power because they're also broadcasting on different frequencies now. But in general, nobody got great increases in power. even in areas that were losing coverage because of the change in power. The FCC did not see a reason or the need to deviate from their power requirements. So these full power licensees are going to lose broadcast space.
Yeah, I just see that as being a big wake-up call come February. People who are used to watching staticky TV and being happy with it are going to...
There's a difference with the signal. There are different things that cause problems with the signal between analog and digital. If you remember my chart with the boxes on it, with an analog signal, mostly what you were hurting was anything big that would slow the signal down or stop the signal completely. Digital can go off of a smaller signal. If you have a little tiny signal with analog, you'll barely be able to see it, and with digital it'll come up. However, the waves are very susceptible to if anything it goes through, such as a tree, will hurt a digital signal more than it'll hurt an analog signal. But a hill will hurt an analog signal more than a digital signal because a tree has water in it. And that water kind of manipulates those waves as they come around and mess up where the ones and zeros go. So it's a slightly different degradation as to where you could get a good digital in one place, you can't get a good analog there, and you can get a good analog here, but not a good digital.
So you swapped one set of problems for another.
Right.
And there may be people who get a fuzzy signal now that with the transition, you know, the change in the transmit power, the location, the direction that they point the antennas, all sorts of things, they're going to get a great signal, better than they've ever seen before. But I think those are going to be far fewer than the people who don't see anything on their TV.
In my limited experience, it seems like that hasn't been.
Yeah.
Plus, as digital gets advances more and more, you'll see less of that as we learn more about it. Because it is kind of a new technology. We're still learning how to point the antennas and how to do that. And that's one of the big tests is there's never been a real wide-scale test of it. And that's the test that he was talking about.
So we're doing that right now in Atlanta. Atlanta has about 22 stations or 22 services encoded, you know, over maybe 14 transports.
They're all higher frequencies, though.
Yes,
they're
the channel, I think, was 8. One of them is actually right around.
Oh, is a lower frequency?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
The local PBS is coming in on channel 8.
Okay, that's new then. That's new.
They're going on and off. They're still testing their signal, so that's why you probably don't see them.
I work for a PBS station in Tallahassee, and they have been working for easily the last year.
Okay.
Switch over to digital. So yeah. Sure, like I get something from Athens, it comes on, it comes off. Yeah, I get something from Fox, and I notice that they stopped broadcasting their EPG data. Like, you know, 10 days ago. So it's like you don't have any EPG data for your. Yeah. For what's the current program?
Believe it or not, I work for a cable TV company. I don't watch TV.
we do the same.
Technology question. With analog signals, if you amplify the incoming signal, you're generally going to get whatever garbage it is. With digital, are you not going to have the ability now to kind of pick up the signal and resample it as it's coming in? Are you start seeing tuners out that will actually amplify the incoming digital signal to resample it accordingly and try to rebuild it? Where you couldn't do that with analog?
Yeah. You can do that with analog. That is a on a signal level, and that's not when you're getting into the digital. I've got something that does that at my house, but it's on the wave level, so all you're doing is increasing that wave.
Right, but on the digital side, wouldn't you be able to turn around and take the carrier, as long as you're getting the carrier amplify the carrier signal, the reception, to be able to start rebuilding the digital data? Like I said, analog you can, with digital you should be able to. I'm just curious if that's...
Oh, you can do that with analog. I've got a box in my house that does that with analog.
For instance, CB, if you turn on a CB and you increase your reception on the CB, like you're trying to increase your distance, you put a receiver on it, sure you can actually get the signal coming in, but all you're amplifying is whatever noise is at the signal at that point.
Yes.
Versus digital,
you pick up
with digital, you can be able, is it actually kind of technology?
You can rebuild. Yes, as a matter of fact, we're already doing that. I see what you mean now. And yes, they're devices that go on the pole. So before your neighborhood, there'll be this big... A big round cylinder on the pole, and the brings power down from. We pay for power from the power company to give it power, and we it brings in the digital.
Rabbit ears type stuff. Would they be able to take the over the ear signal, the digital signal coming in, and be able to amplify that up?
if it's degraded to the point where you can't see it anymore, then it's going to be very difficult to rebuild that.
It's really the same noise.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same noise, and it gets into improving your reception at that point.
But the biggest point, though, is that the tuners can pull a signal, like, out of the dirt. Like, we have Thompson tuners. They'll pull a signal, like, out of negative 90, you know, and you'll still be able to tune and view that. We've been implementing this one in Mexico for a while now, and... like it pulls it out by using an amplification on the signal, but again, what antennas are amplifying?
It comes up right, and this, even if you rebuild it, it's not going to come up perfect.
Oh, I'm not saying perfect. I just mean, you know, a digital signal switch. You got the carrier, and I'm assuming with the digital broadcast, they got the two. Is it now two or three frequencies now? They can generate two or three signals that can send out now at the same time, where they can always start one with analog.
It's the same.
Yeah. It's the same frequency, and it's not random, but it's approximate.
I haven't looked at the actual signals and what the layout of the signals to see if they're actually adding in the digital re-encryption or the digital recoding that you could do to rebuild a, you know, marginal signal.
Mm-hmm.
I use VCRs a lot. In fact, I don't watch anything directly. Because I don't want to cut out the commercials. I don't know. I'm afraid that they get louder, and I just can't think. But you mentioned that with forcing everyone onto digital, there's obviously a whole lot more control by the company over what you can do with it. Or there could be. I don't even know if there would be
content providers.
But what could be done, or what will be done in terms of DRM for those things, in terms of stuff that you're recording on your own in your own home?
There have been a lot of going back and forth about broadcast flags and other digital input that basically the content providers would be able to flag content and set limits and restrictions on what you can do with the content. There is a provision, to my understanding, and I'll check on my tech side here, that there is a provision in the actual signal and the technical specs that allow for different restrictions to be placed. And it's going to come down to, at this point, whether those things are allowed. The FCC has allowed it in some instances, and especially on cable systems, they've not had any problem with letting cable providers make restrictions on their system that they want to make. With the over-the-air, there's a different issue there with it being the public trust and that type of situation. So there might be less restriction with the over-the-air broadcast, but for the most part, you should expect that there will be some sort of ability to restrict your ability to make copies or to view the content later.
Is there legislation pending about the whole audio issue that you mentioned? Regarding commercials, isn't there legislation right now about that?
There's currently some legislation about the audio levels.
It's gotten really bad. I noticed it too. I can't even have a conversation with my parents anymore at dinner because of the damn commercials.
And a lot of times we're kind of fighting a war of loudness on all fronts with all forms of music and all audio at this point. And you're starting to hear some of the effects of that, and now it's becoming very noticeable with the limited range of things when they amp it up at such a level that it's hard to get the full dynamic range. Yeah, so it's really somewhat difficult. I need to offer a short clarification to my statement earlier. Right now, I'm an independent patent attorney. My main client at this point is Port Authority, but they're not my sole employer. And of course, any statements I make are not reflective of the Port Authority or anything along those lines. I'm sure your statements are not reflective of any cable company that might or might not exist.
Exactly.
Or wear robes. You said you worked for General Scientific or
Scientific Atlanta, Scientific. That's now Cisco.
Yeah. When were they acquired by Cisco?
Last year.
Yeah.
Recent.
Yeah, it's really recent.
They're still selling all their boxes with SA on it. They haven't switched the boxes.
Honestly, there are only two companies that sell the QAMs and the digital equipment to go in the head ends. That's Scientific Atlanta and Motorola.
And Nagravision.
Nagravision?
Nagravision's the largest encryption provider in the world.
Encryption? Yeah, but they don't sell.
Yeah, we do. We just
you sell the cherry pickers and the QAMs and QPSKs.
With leases and whatnot. But in the United States, it's mostly a stronghold with Motorola and SA at the moment.
Yeah. I didn't know there was another one.
But in Americas, in Europe, and in other countries, it's Nagravision usually.
Well, what's the other one?
Okay. Nagravision?
Nagravision.
Like the Nagra recorder? Same
company? Yes, okay. Same company, that's Nagra Audio.
Oh, okay.
So there's Nagra Audio, Nagra Star, Nagra Star, Nagra Vision is a company that we work for.
Okay.
We actually have an Atlanta office and a Gainesville, Florida office. The Florida office has like two digital channels to do tests on. And
What's funny is we were not allowed to, the FCC, this will be we'll have to wrap it up, but the FCC did not allow us to do any service in Atlanta, but they required us to have a service in the state that we resided. So what we had to do was go down to Macon, buy out this little tiny cable company, and we rebuilt Macon with all SA equipment, and they are the most advanced cable system in the Southeast because we had to completely build them from the ground up. But yeah, Macon, Georgia has the most advanced. I don't know. I don't know who it was. I think it was a little local cable company.
Mediacom?
But it was years ago.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
It was probably Mediacom.
Was it?
I was wondering, is it Mediacom?
I don't know. I wasn't. I didn't work for them when we did that.
They are all over the country.
That's not little.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Well, they're not. They're
support calls from like Seattle, Washington. One.
But they could have bought out the Macon.
Yeah, we could have bought out the Macon hub. We had to buy somebody in Atlanta. We had to have service in Georgia. And so, yeah, Macon has the most advanced system in the Southeast.
So you didn't want to go to Brunswick?
As far as internet service, there's a little tiny city in Alabama that has the most advanced internet service in all of the country because they are the test bed where they test new technology.
Have you seen the INS, the stuff in Iowa, though? Mm-mm. They have a fiber optic ring amongst all the cable providers and internet providers, so there's like cable IPTV, and it's just a huge fiber optic ring around
right.
The entire
and
state.
That's how it's fiber to every house out in Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
A little tiny town.
Oh, yeah.
But I got one of the first cable modems in Georgia. It was this big, weighed 60 pounds, and it was cast iron. Yes. Yes, exactly what it was. Are there any other quick questions?
Yeah, what kind of antenna, like an indoor antenna, would you recommend to receive?
Same thing you had before.
What?
Same thing you had before. It's the same frequency. Yeah, all the frequencies are the same.
For over the air, I would highly recommend using one of the channel masters. They have some that would go inside, but I found that the rabbit ears.
Yeah, but if you buy.
No, I don't have any with me. But hugme.org. Hugme.org.
Oh, that's really right.
Yeah.
That was a joke.
No, it's hugme.
Oh, okay. I'll just kill
it. Okay, sure.
Hugme.org.
Okay. Yep. Well, thank you guys.
Thank y'all.
Thank you.